VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
As always, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. I believe you'll find today's program quite interesting, filled with lots of information. As you know, and perhaps have been hearing, COVID hospitalizations have continued to plunge across the United States. And at the same time, there's emphasis being given on the shot. A first dose, a second dose, a booster, and now the CEO of Pfizer is saying a fourth COVID shot is necessary due to the injection's waning immunity. Well, at the same time, places like California have been looking at shot mandates on children. Florida has come under criticism for discouraging COVID shots for children. Tests have been conducted on children ages 6 months to 4 years receiving the shots. What's a parent to do? And while hospitalizations and deaths are plunging, and at least 20 states are now plunging into smart health card digital proof of vaccination systems. Well, with the latest information, we welcome back Barbara Lowe Fisher. She is president of the National Vaccine Information Center. They're a nonprofit charity. She co-founded it with parents of DPT vaccine injured children in 1982. NVIC is a national grassroots movement and public information campaign to institute vaccine safety reforms and inform consent protections in the public health system. She has researched, she's analyzed, and publicly articulated the major issues involving the science, policy, law, ethics, and politics of vaccination to become one of the world's leading non-medical consumer advocacy experts on the topic. And Barbara, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Oh, thank you. Always a pleasure to have a conversation with you.
Well, you know, we've got a lot to unpack today, and I'd like to begin with children, and we're going to start with the very young. As you know, testing has been done on babies, infants, as young as 6 months up to 4 years. We were told to anticipate emergency use authorization in this age group, but something instead happened. What's going on with this?
Right. About a month, 6 weeks ago, Pfizer was poised, at the request of the FDA, to present data regarding the proof that their COVID mRNA COVID vaccine was effective and safe in children under 5 years old down to 6 months old. They had scheduled a meeting of the Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee at the FDA to discuss this, and all of a sudden they withdrew their application, because they said they were having trouble showing that the vaccine was effective in the younger age group. So they went back to their trials, and they have bought time, but they definitely are planning, it's our understanding, are planning to reapply so that that meeting can be held in April or so to be able to bring this vaccine down to the infants as young as 6 months old.
So they're saying it's not effective. Are they changing the formula somehow, or the amount of dosage? I mean, what will they do different to make it so-called effective among six-month-olds?
Well, we don't know. We do know that they have reduced the amount down to 10 micrograms, and they down from 30. And so clearly what was happening was they were having a trouble having the vaccine be both safe and effective in that age group. So they lowered the dose in order to try to eliminate systemic reactions, which are quite high with this Pfizer COVID vaccine and with the Moderna vaccine as well. But the Moderna is not licensed for children, whereas the Pfizer vaccine is licensed at this point for children as young as 5 years old. But so what they're looking for, of course, is the infant group, the little babies that... Really, it's the children under the age of six who get most of the vaccines in this country. So they really want that age group. And they're having trouble making the vaccine less reactive, but also retaining at least some kind of protection. Now, this vaccine, this Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine, we already know from the very beginning in December 2020, when the companies, including Pfizer, were given emergency use authorization, an EUA, by the FDA to distribute the vaccines, that these vaccines were never designed to actually prevent infection and transmission. They were designed to prevent severe COVID disease symptoms that would land people in the hospital and would contribute to death. So we're talking about severe disease. We're not talking about interruption of infection and transmission. And I think a lot of people in the country have been conditioned, well, not just the country, but the world. We've been conditioned to believe that vaccines are supposed to prevent you from being infected and transmitting the infection to other people. And they really didn't clearly articulate that at the beginning of this pandemic.
No, but what they didn't
tell people that. So people assumed that if they got vaccinated, that they wouldn't be infected or transmit. Mm-hmm. And that's why there was a lot of scratching of the heads, you know, when after the vaccine came out and people started getting vaccinated and they said, oh, well, you have to continue to wear the masks. That's when people started asking questions. So wait a minute, if I have to still wear a mask after I've been vaccinated, then is the vaccine, what's the vaccine exactly doing?
Mm-hmm.
Is it not protecting me and not protecting me from infecting other people?
So what do? We change the definition of vaccination.
We absolutely, that's exactly what happened. The definition of vaccination, you know, was changed by the CDC in 2021 and even by Merriam-Webster Dictionary.
Amazing.
To no longer, in other words, the old definition of vaccine and vaccination talked about a product that stimulates a person's immune system to produce immunity to a specific disease. They changed that definition to a preparation that is used to stimulate the body's immune response against diseases. So they removed the concept of immunity. Merriam-Webster also changed the definition to eliminate the concept that a vaccine stimulates immunity and replaced it with the concept that vaccines create a immune response. That's a very, very different definition of the effectiveness of vaccines and what vaccines do.
Yeah.
And so to try to unlearn, you know, to try to change people's perception of vaccination, there's really been no attempt by the government or by the companies to re-educate the people about this change in definition. So people are continuing to assume that if they get vaccinated, they can't get infected or transmit, and it's not true.
Barbara, so in regard to the going down to infants, little babies, 6 months old, and doing the trials on them, why are we focusing on this age group other than for monetary purposes? I mean, is this an age group that has been, by and large, having lots of symptoms that somehow we're trying to avert?
No, this is an age group. This infection, this virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which there still is an argument about whether it was man-made, whether it was created in a lab and escaped from the lab, or whether it naturally occurred in nature. There is still no resolution of that outstanding question. But aside from that, this virus, from the beginning, was particularly dangerous for the elderly who had a coinciding chronic health care condition like high blood pressure, obesity, diabetes with complications, respiratory disease, those things that contribute to poor health later in life. And, of course, in age, as you age, your immune system is not as efficient at responding to the infections with viruses and bacteria. So, you know, the elderly were really hit hard, and 80%, I think it's about 80% of the deaths from COVID in the U.S. and around the world have been in the elderly. But thankfully, the little children, the infants and young children, blew by this infection for the most part. Now, there have been some deaths, but they've been less than 1%. I mean, it's a very, very low risk for complications and infection and a death from COVID disease in infants and children. And again, those infants and children who are at risk are the ones who have coinciding other chronic conditions the same type of conditions as for adults who have complications, and that is obesity, diabetes, any kind of autoimmune or disorder or something that is going to help, is going to compromise your immune system. So there have been some deaths, but it's like I'm trying to think. I just did a report that was published on MVIC.org, what mothers should know about COVID and COVID-19 mm-hmm. vaccine for children. And it's really quite an overview. It's about an hour video, but if you want to skim and go through the report, I talk about COVID disease in children. I talk about how serious is it. I talk about the efficacy of the vaccines, about the risks associated with the vaccines, and about alternatives treatments that can be used if you get COVID disease. And so this, it's not just really for children. I mean, you can learn a lot about the disease if you happen to be an adult and you come down with it. It's a good resource to be able to figure out whether you want to contact a doctor who perhaps is treating COVID in a different way than some of the protocols that are being used. Because if you look at COVID, there was really a very, very high mortality rate in hospitals. When people were hospitalized with COVID in 2020 and early 2021, because there are so few officially approved therapies and drugs, all the emphasis was put on the development of vaccines, very little emphasis on development of therapies to try to get people through a COVID-19. So many people were put on ventilators immediately when they got into the hospital. Very high mortality in 2020 and early 2021 until they learned how to, manage people with COVID in hospitals. So it's important to know that there are alternatives, including natural alternatives to getting through a mild and moderate case of COVID.
We're talking with Barbara Lowe-Fisher today, and Barbara, I don't know if you've seen the news yet today, but we understand in a breaking news alert that went out that the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki has tested positive for COVID-19 just hours before President Biden is to head to Europe. And I know that, there have been others. We have the husband of vice president as well, who had tested positive and so forth. And these are people who, touted receiving the shot and certainly the boosters and telling America they need to do this. And now they themselves are coming down with this. Doesn't this give a mixed message to the people across the nation?
Well, I mean, the truth is the truth. And the truth about this vaccine is that you can have two or three doses of the vaccine and you still can get COVID. And you can still be infectious and transmit. That's why they're worried, clearly, that if she's positive and he's had a lot of contact with her, the president has, that there's a risk there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is one of the, again, going back to December of 2020 when that EUA was given to Pfizer and the other companies, they did not have to prove that the vaccine blocked infection and transmission, but that wasn't communicated to the public.
Oh. We're going to take a quick break here. Barbara Lowe-Fisher is with us here today, president of the National Vaccine Information Center, talking about COVID shots, children, and also, folks, we're going to be getting to the smart health cards as well. Stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how old is the moon?
Chris, according to evolution, the Earth and the moon are about the same age, nearly 5 billion years old. But there's a problem. We observe that the moon is slowly moving away from the Earth. If you assume that it's always been moving away, then you can calculate how close it was to Earth at some time in the past. 1 billion years ago, the moon would be in contact with the Earth. Scientifically, this could not be. The Bible says that on day one of creation week, God created the earth, but it was on day four that he created the moon. They were not ever connected. Chris, it shouldn't surprise us, but the scientific information fits with the biblical information. Science supports scripture and not evolution or long ages. Let's go back to Genesis and get it right.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. COVID shots, children, smart health cards are topics here today. Barbara Lowe Fisher is our guest, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. And Barbara said something in the first segment here that I want to just go back and underscore, and that is she just recently, within the last week or so, conducted a video chat on this topic, what mothers should know about COVID and COVID-19 vaccine for children. You can go to their site, you can watch it, or if you don't have time to watch it, you can click a button and get a hard copy of what she had to say. The website, NVIC.org, that stands for National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. Barbara, you know, it's not only infants and preschoolers now that, you know, they're experimenting with, but there's continued emphasis on children across the nation getting shots. And I just saw legislators in California, they've been looking at forced vaccination for children that are going to be in the education system there.
Well, of course, there's a long history in this country of using the schools and daycare as the gatekeepers. That is, no shots, no school, no shots, no daycare. And it's really morphed now in the last, especially the last 2 years, to no shots, no medical care, mm-hmm. no shots, no adequate health insurance, you know, no shots, no entry into restaurants, et cetera. I mean, it's gotten really bad in the last 2 years, this idea of forced vaccination, the force being that you aren't able to participate in society. Really, basically, unless you get all the government-recommended and mandated vaccines. I remember back in the 90s when I started doing public speaking about what I said was going to come, and that was this forced vaccination infrastructure, which I knew was coming because I had sat at the table with a lot of public health officials and vaccine manufacturer reps, et cetera, and I knew that's what they wanted. I mean, that guarantees when you mandate a product to be used or you suffer punishment for not using it, that creates a very stable market for the producers of that product, in this case vaccines. And if you don't have any liability attached, which there is no, as of 2011, there is no liability attached to these vaccine manufacturers for their vaccines. If they have a faulty design, and certainly if we still had that liability in force today, if the Supreme Court had not taken away all the liability in 2011, we could sue the vaccine manufacturers for failure to design a product that did not have high risk and low effectiveness. But we don't have that ability anymore. So anybody who rolls up their sleeve or rolls up their child's sleeve is basically on their own if they mm-hmm. get injured or if the vaccine doesn't work and they get COVID and you know, die or are injured. I mean, it's an amazing system at this point. But I knew many years ago that this infrastructure was being created because I was watching them create it. And that infrastructure was to facilitate forced vaccination by creation of medical records and vaccine tracking systems, electronic vaccine tracking systems that they began in about 10 cities in the early 90s and then said they started setting them up by state. But the plan was to hook up all the state electronic vaccine and medical records tracking systems to a national tracking system and then to an international vaccine and medical records tracking system. And that is, when we talk about the Great Reset, people have talked about the Great Reset, and you can read about it on mm-hmm. the World Economic Forum website.
Yep.
And it certainly, electronic tracking of our movements is part of that. So that brings us to the smart health card. Now, as you all know, the federal government, tried to mandate the COVID vaccine in this country. First time the federal government tried to mandate the use of a vaccine. In this case, the administration said any company that has more than 100 employees must mandate that their employees get the vaccine or they're fired. And all the federal workers, all the federal agency workers were mandated to get the vaccine, the COVID vaccine. When it was challenged in the courts in this past year, the courts, including the Supreme Court, basically said that was overreach. So as it stands right now, this idea of a vaccine passport that allows you to work if you're in a corporation that has over 100 employees, or you're working for the federal government or state governments, I mean, because a lot of states tried to do this too, you know, this idea of having a vaccine passport in order to participate in society has kind of hit roadblocks. And so, but what people don't realize is there's a private effort underway, something called the Vaccine Credential Initiative, VCI, which is a voluntary global coalition of public and private stakeholders, including Microsoft, Salesforce, Google, Oracle, the Mayo Clinic, United Healthcare Group, state governments, and other health and technology companies that have been involved in creating a digital proof of vaccination called the Smart Health Card. Now, it is, in effect, a type of passport in that you can then show it, like if you're traveling or whatever, and to prove that you've gotten the COVID vaccine. Well, as far as I'm concerned, they're starting out with COVID vaccine, but you can be sure they're going to want to add all the vaccines onto that card. Right?
Right, and more to come. And I find this very interesting because, you know, we see numbers going down, but yet we see states that are aggressively getting involved with this smart health card, which seems to imply that there's going to be another resurgence or something's going to happen along that line to incorporate this. It's just a matter of time before we hear of another surge of some sort or some other variant in which this can be implemented.
Well, I absolutely think you're on the right track. This digital card uses an open source computer code. It produces the unique QR code, barcode. State health departments, pharmacies, healthcare organizations have access. It can work interoperably through states, but, you know, it's going to be international.
Yeah.
It's going to ultimately be international. And, of course, the problem is, you know, privacy, medical privacy, but there are states, Arizona, Mississippi, South Carolina, Oklahoma, Utah, have said, wait a minute, we're having some issues here. We're a little concerned about threats to civil rights and medical privacy. Other states, have decided that, well, it's not a threat and we're going to go ahead with it. South Carolina is going to make the Smart Health Pass available to residents at the end of, in another 30 days or so. So there are some governors that are very high on it. They say, look, this is voluntary. Mm-hmm. Nobody is forcing you to sign up for this Smart Health Card. But other people are saying, this is the beginning of what will eventually be mandatory, that you will have to carry the Smart Health Card. And it opens up the threats, you know, the whole idea of a threat to your liberty, your medical privacy. Australia has adopted the Smart Health Card. Canada, Singapore, Japan, Kenya. So there are countries that are starting to come on board right now. And I do think the ultimate plan is for everybody in the world to carry this smart health card.
Yeah, and what's interesting, and we, this matter of identification and so forth, the passport side of this, we also became aware of something called Trust Stamp, a digital identity program that's said to be funded by Bill Gates, implemented by MasterCard, we understand this is soon going to link your biometric digital identity to your vaccination records. Mm-hmm. The program said it's to evolve as you evolve. And you see many of these things coming together. And if this is linking your credit card to the vaccination status that one may have, wouldn't this give retailers or businesses the ability to deny purchases to those who don't have the vaccination status?
Absolutely. And your banks. And
yes.
Banks. I mean, there is this move, if you look at what's happening out there, this move to try to link everything electronically, including your bank. You can have your funds seized. You could have your bank account frozen. There are all, I mean, I've always said that the forced vaccination issue is the tip of the spear in the culture wars that are occurring.
Yes.
Certainly in the Great Reset. It is definitely, if you can justify tracking everybody in the world, their vaccination status, and then that really morphs into your your medical status, what is being done to your body? What have you done to your body? Have you conformed with what the government thinks you should do to your body? And that's all a matter of an electronic record. And that electronic record is connected with everything that you do, where you eat, what kind of food you buy, what kind of products you purchase online, where you bank, etc. That is complete control over your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so NVIC, my organization, has since the 90s been opposed to the vaccine tracking systems and medical records tracking systems that force you to participate in those systems. We have said it must be opt-in. It must be voluntary. But as we can see in the last 2 years, voluntary is not part of the plan.
Right, right. Yes.
It compelling people to conform and to participate in these systems is part of the plan.
Yeah, or
by those who exploit and profit
mm-hmm.
from people.
Yeah,
and I just don't understand why a lot of – I think people have opened their eyes. More people's eyes are opened after the last 2 years, but I'm not sure enough.
Yeah. And what we find is this voluntary. Oh, yes, it's voluntary, but we're just not going to hire you, or you won't be able to work here. You can go someplace else. Yeah, it's totally voluntary. We see that even in the medical profession, that doctors and so forth, it's voluntary. You just can't work here if unless you are, receive the shot. Barbara, I do want to cover one other point here as well, because it was just a week ago Sunday morning that the CEO of Pfizer, Albert Bourla, announced that most people are going to need a four shot. Evidently, their shots don't provide long-lasting immunity against COVID. What about this four shot? Comment on that, if you would.
Oh, absolutely. Moderna and Pfizer have both applied to the FDA for a fourth shot, approval for an EUA fourth shot. And actually, you will see them eventually saying it's got to be an annual shot, just like the flu shot. I predict that it's going to be an annual shot. In fact, they're working on combining the flu and the COVID shots. I mean, there's a lot of combination vaccines that are being created, many hundreds of vaccines being created in the pipeline. Again, if you don't have any liability,
mm-hmm.
if you don't have the liability for whether your product is safe or whether and hurts people, or whether your product actually works, and you have no liability for that, and then you've got a law behind it where people have to do it or they can't participate in society. I've always called it a drug company stockholder's dream and a consumer's worst nightmare. We need to change the laws in this country. There's much too much power and money has been given to these companies and the public health officials and doctors who are part of this mass vaccination system.
Barbara Lowe Fisher with us today. Folks, we've got a lot on the table, and we're going to dedicate this next half of the program here to you, your calls coming in, your questions that you have for our guest. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829. 1-800-733-9829. I'd like to encourage you to check out their website, nvic.org, and they monitor legislation in states all across this country, as well as what's coming forth from the U.S. Congress. And to stay abreast and sign up for those matters, check out nvicadvocacy.org as well. We'll be back in 1 minute taking your calls, 800-733-9829. You're listening to Crosstalk.
The Bible says that life is but a vapor that's here for a short time and then vanishes away. Scripture also says, it's appointed unto man once to die, but after this, the judgment. Have you ever wondered what happens when you die? In the book, What Happens After Life, author Ron Rose provides a survey of the Bible's teachings about the afterlife. He tracks the destiny for those who know Christ as Savior and the destiny for unbelievers. He addresses numerous topics, such as the immediate state after death, believers and the judgment seat of Christ, unbelievers and the great white throne judgment, the new heavens and a new earth, the new Jerusalem, and so much more. He even tackles the question of what happens to infants, young children, and those mentally disabled as it relates to eternity. What Happens After Life is available for a donation of $15 or more by calling VCY at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Friends, there is so much, and it feels like we have just scratched the surface on these issues here today. COVID shots, children, the smart health cards, many, many issues here that we've put out on the table and taking your calls here on Crosstalk. We're going to begin in Linden Station, Wisconsin. We have Amy calling. Amy, you're on the air. Hello, Amy.
Hi.
You're on the air.
My name is...
Amy, turn your radio down, please. Amy, please turn down the radio and just listen over the phone. We're getting lots of feedback, and there's delay there as well.
I recently attended a Juneau County Board meeting, mm-hmm. and they were passing basically a move to for the county to kick in a certain percent and to receive federal ARPA funds. And basically with those ARPA funds, it said they must be traced back to the pandemic. They have to improve or correct the problem from before the pandemic, and it has to bring people back to where they were before the pandemic or better. And one woman who was with the, she wasn't on the board, but she was with the, basically worked for the county, said that we need to read between the lines of these federal regulations because the reporting requirements might be too difficult to get. And then in addition to that, I saw a program where a woman...
Okay, Amy, let me interrupt you for just a moment. Let's get to our topic of vaccinations here today.
Okay, basically the ARPA funds are probably they're going to child care and other categories, but the ones that go to the child care is probably going to require the vaccine for anybody that takes that money. So basically, I think it's going to be federal slavery if you take the money. The counties kick in, and then the federal government kicks in to improve a child care center, and probably if they take that, then the requirement is going to be that those kids have to be vaccinated.
Okay, well, I have our guest comment on that. Thank you, Amy, for that. Is that likelihood possible here, Barbara?
Well, there's a long history of the federal government basically giving financial incentives to the states to raise vaccination rates in any way they can. So there's a long tradition of grants coming from the federal government or money coming from the federal government to induce states, because vaccine laws basically in this country are state laws. That's why, you know, there was an unsuccessful attempt by the federal government to get involved in mandating a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
I think legally that was one of the hurdles that they were trying to overcome, and they did not overcome it. So there's a lot of power in the states, which is why NVIC in 2010 created the NVIC Advocacy Portal at nvicadvocacy.org, a communications network and an advocacy network that allows you to become active in your state to try to help get laws passed and defeat bad vaccine laws that limit your ability to make vaccine choices. So it's all about getting involved in government, becoming what I call participating in democracy, and trying to make sure that the laws in your state that govern vaccination do not, as in the case of the caller just now, do not penalize you if you decide that one or more vaccines are not appropriate for you or your
mm-hmm.
child. So the big answer is yes, the federal government does pay the states to do what the federal government wants them to do.
And likely strings to be attached. Let's go to Tom in Fort Scott, Kansas. Tom, you're on the air.
Yeah, so I want to thank you very much for the topic. You know, I had a doctor that was pushing everything, the COVID shot, the shingle shot, the flu shot. You know, my mother got a shot for that bird flu thing, and she ended up getting that Guillain-Barré syndrome in her 60s. And it's just terrible that older people are scared into this, or they're going to get sick and die. And if they just realize, you know, if they just turn their life over to Christ, they wouldn't have to worry about death. They just, you know, just go through what we need to and then do what's right.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tom, for that. Barbara, as he points out, there is a lot of fear that's given to individuals in the various shots that he described.
Well, that's true. And why is there fear? There's fear because there's not education, because we have the facts have been kept from the people, and people have been basically pressured into simply obeying what they're told to do when it comes to vaccination and infectious diseases. And so we all need to become educated about this issue so that we can exercise freedom of thought, rational thinking, and be able to make decisions that are not fear-based. Fear, most fear is because you don't have the information you need to make a rational decision. And so that is the reason that I've dedicated the last 40 years of my life to this issue, because I believe that knowledge is power, and that people can get their arms around this subject. Look, I was just a mother of a child who had a severe reaction to a fourth DPT shot. And I just decided I was going to find out what the information was. And in doing that, I realized that the vast majority of people don't have the information. And I believe that you know, if you just do what you're told, instead of getting the information and making your own decision, you don't really own the decision. You can't defend the decision. You're basically doing it out of fear.
Yeah.
And so, you know, thank you for telling people about this commentary I wrote. I did a deep dive in medical literature. It is the facts. I want people to have both sides of the story. I want them to have all the information to empower them to make their own decision. You know, when people buy cars or a house, they spend more time researching that purchase than they do when it comes to vaccination. Because we've been taught to just salute smartly. And I think that it's sad because Guillain-Barré syndrome, he mentioned Guillain-Barré syndrome. That is a reaction to this COVID-19 vaccine. They have seen Guillain-Barré syndrome, a number of reports after the Pfizer vaccine for sure.
Let's get to Brad in West Dallas. Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. Little reminder for everybody. Remember when it came out with the vaccines? Safe and effective. Pounding that hammer every time you heard them speak. If it's effective, why do we need 2, 3, and 4 shots of it? Why not just one? If it's safe, why are people dying? Why are there exemptions for people like criminal aliens and politicians and extra special groups like Muslims? Why is there lawsuit immunity for Big Pharma? None of this makes any sense if it's safe and effective. Stay away from this stuff.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
And, Barbara, that's the mantra we heard over and over again, safe and effective. Yet we see at Open Vares 25,641 deaths following the vaccine through March 11th, over 141,000 hospitalization, over 13,000 heart attacks, over 47,000 who have been permanently disabled. Safe and effective?
Right. I would encourage people on our website at mbic.org, we have something called MedAlerts. It's one of the websites that we sponsor, MedAlerts.org. It is the oldest search engine independent of the government. It was founded in 2003, and we have worked with the creator of MedAlerts since then, but particularly since 2006. And we've been because NVIC, we were the ones who got the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System included in the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. We insisted that there be a centralized adverse event reporting system that was open to the public, that was transparent, that the public could report to, not just the doctors and the manufacturers. We got it, okay, and we've been monitoring it ever since. And this MedAlert search engine is the best search engine to use. There have been over 2 million at this point, 2 million vaccine adverse event reports to VAERS since 1990 when it became operational. Over 1.1 million are COVID vaccine-related. That means of all the adverse event reports reported after vaccination in the U.S., more than half are COVID vaccine-related. That is an astonishing statistic.
Yeah, it is.
It is absolutely unbelievable. And over 24,000 COVID vaccine-related deaths, and a Pfizer vaccine, which is the vaccine that's licensed for children, over 16,000 of those deaths are Pfizer. So I am very concerned about this pending EUA for the children under 5 years old that will go down as low as 6 months.
Yeah.
Because the little babies and the children can't talk. They can't describe. I mean, infants cannot describe what's happening to them. And it's very important for parents to become informed about the signs and symptoms of a vaccine reaction, which they can do on our website at mbic.org. and make sure that they report that to a doctor and not get blown off that it's not important. It is important.
We're going to go to anonymous caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering what you could tell me about. I have asthma, and I go to the doctor yearly, but I was going to go for my yearly, and COVID was around. I got COVID in November, but now they're denying me my asthma medicine until I come in. And I'm afraid to go in because they're pushing the COVID shots, pneumococcal, flu, a whole bunch of them. And I'm going to be denied my inhalers because of this.
Well,
is there anything I can do?
Yeah, you do have the right to say no. I mean,
I did say no.
You mean to the shots?
Yeah, well, I didn't go in because they're sending me, they're actually calling me and saying you're due for your COVID shot.
Right,
and
right.
Pneumococcal and a bunch of others.
Right, and you have the right to say no to those shots and still, you know, go in to see your physician.
Well, I didn't go in because I can't wear a mask. I can't breathe in it.
Mm-hmm.
I get terrified when I go in and my blood pressure goes up and a whole bunch of other things.
Sure.
Well, there are a number of people who have been going, if they're afraid of going into a doctor, have been going to the urgent care clinics. I don't know if you have an urgent care clinic in your home, in your state or near you, but it's our information that the urgent care clinics, which are private clinics that have physicians on staff, are not being as aggressive in terms of pressing people with vaccination. You go in, you are seen, you need an asthma inhaler, whatever it is you need, and you know, you deal with them that way. I can't guarantee you, but I mean, yeah. I do know that there have been people who have reported to NVIC that they're being treated less aggressively in the urgent care clinic.
Have you also tried a virtual visit?
No.
Okay.
Because I don't have I have a computer, but it doesn't, going on stuff like that doesn't work right. It goes off.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to do that. And I
sure.
was going to do it by phone, but can't get a hold of anybody. So I just decided not to do it, and I'm winging it right now.
Yeah.
I did go to urgent care once, mm-hmm. and they gave me one inhaler. That's all they'll give you.
Sure. And maybe making a call to your physician's office as well and explaining how you're not able to wear a mask, what you can do as an alternative. Maybe there's a side door you can enter into the clinic or something of that nature, but don't give up. Continue to pursue it. Thanks for the call. Christine is next. You're on the air, Christine.
Okay. I want to thank you for relaying your with the vaccines. My children had reactions. I was well aware of VAERS 15 years ago, so I knew right away that this vaccine was going to be a real problem. And needless to say, the reason I'm calling is I have called the hospitals in our area and told them that I know many people who will not come into the doctor. They no longer trust their doctors. Mm-hmm. All they do is constantly pushing the vaccines. My father and my brother, many people I know, terrible reactions. And I've told them. So they're like, well, we have to do what we're told or we will be shut down. So I continue to call my wonderful Senator Ron Johnson. But what else can we do? Because we do have to be proactive to stand against this the draconian push of Big Pharma, which has the control over these hospitals.
Christine, thank you so much. We're up against a break, so we'll have Barbara respond after the break. Thanks for the call. Back in a minute here on Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Did you guys know about BioLogos? This is an organization I warned about in my 2016 book, The Coming Religious Reich. Reich means empire or kingdom. How ironic that I warned about BioLogos, because that is an organization that was catering specifically to pastors to teach theistic evolution, which is that God used evolution. That undermines the Bible. It undermines the authority of the Bible. It also brings us death and disease before the original sin and the fall. How could God proclaim everything good as he did, very good, when there's all this death that's been going on for millions and millions of years? You see, theistic evolution undermines the Bible. Who's promoting that? Francis Collins. Remember him with the NIH, who is reportedly harvesting baby scalps to put on the back of rodents? That's the guy that started BioLogos to infiltrate the churches of America. Be warned.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Barbara Lowe Fisher, our guest here today, president of the National Vaccine Information Center. And again, on their website, they do have this video chat that Barbara gave, what mothers should know about COVID and COVID-19 vaccine for children. You'll find that at nvic.org. So Barbara, the caller before the break, Christine, was just saying, you know, the doctors are pushing this. They said, well, that's just something we're supposed to do. I mean, they're saying it's basically as part of their protocols in all of this. And they're saying many are just not trusting the medical profession anymore.
Well, that's absolutely true. This is what has happened in the last 2 years has made people very afraid of going to the doctor, very afraid of public health officials, very suspicious of politicians who want to bring down the hammer on people and force them to do things they don't want to do with their bodies or their children's bodies. So how do you change it? As I was saying before, we have to get involved in our governmental system. We have to get out of our houses, go down and meet our legislators, go down and meet opinion makers in the community, our community leaders, and we have to press for change in laws. If we don't like the laws, if we don't like the way doctors are allowed to treat us or to deny us medical care, et cetera, then we have to pass laws that say, doctor, you can't do that. You know, it requires us to become active.
Mm-hmm.
And most people with very busy lives, I know, but, you know, if you're in a situation, if we're going to be in a situation where we cannot function in society, including have access over to what we do with our money, then we are going to be in a situation that, you know, what's the quality of life that we're going to have? So we need to make the investment now, so that our future looks better. And that means everybody has to take personal responsibility and not think somebody else is going to do it.
Yeah. Let's see. Our next caller holding the longest has been Chris in West Dallas. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for your commitment and hard work and dedication to getting out the truth. My comment is this: people don't realize what I believe is that COVID-19 vaccine is just a forerunner of what's to come. What I truly believe is coming next, the next virus that comes forth, is a bio vaccination with a microchip that will be mandated and mandatory for all people. And then you are going to see how people respond and react, because people have been conditioned. People have been prepared for what's to come. This COVID-19 is just the beginning. This is not the final goal or objective to what lies ahead.
Thank you, Chris. And what he's basically saying, this is a stepping stone to something more. And I guess when that happens, Barbara, the government seizes even more power after that.
I agree. I think that we don't know what is planned next, but we have a pretty good idea of how they're going to go about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't like what you've been subjected to in the last 2 years, if you have that funny feeling inside of your gut that something is not right, that a change needs to be made, it means that you have to get involved. I always say, be the one who never has to say, you did not do today what you could have done to change tomorrow.
Hmm.
And so sign up for the MVIC advocacy portal.
Yeah.
It's free. And it will keep you up to date on vaccine-related legislation moving in your state, whether it's good legislation or bad. In fact, the last 12 years that we've been doing this, we have now are supporting in the states more good vaccine legislation than opposing bad, because the states are waking up. Last year, not one state legislature passed a COVID-19 vaccine mandate. People, of all the talk, it's been the governors and mayors and that kind of thing that have passed these COVID vaccine
yep.
requirements or the masking requirements, not the state legislatures. So we can make a difference if we get involved. And that portal will send you an email when there's, you know, including talking points that you can take down to talk to your legislators if it's a good, bad, or a bad vaccine bill.
Let me squeeze one more call in. David in Glasgow, Kentucky, you're on the air.
Thank you, Jim. My wife saw something I think intended to be humorous on Facebook the other day, but I think it has a serious kind of tone. if you took your dog to your vet and he said, need to give him a rabies shot, and 2 months later, vet calls you, bring your dog in, get a rabies shot. A few months later, vet calls, bring your dog in, get a rabies shot. Then your dog gets rabies. And the vet says, well, the cure for that is to bring him in and get a rabies shot. The point is, again, that's supposed to be humorous. You know, if we wouldn't trust a vet with our dog, why would we trust our government that's trying to enforce the jab?
Hmm. Interesting comment. Thank you, David. Barbara.
Right. I mean, if you have to force people to do something, you've already lost. You know, if the vaccines are safe and effective, and people want to get them, they will. If you have to force people, something's wrong. And this idea that you have to, that somehow certain people in society have to be able to tell other people what to do without getting their informed consent. I'm a big informed consent advocate. What does it mean? It means that informed consent to medical risk-taking means that you have the human right to be fully informed about a medical intervention or a product, a pharmaceutical product that carries a risk, and be able to make a voluntary decision without being coerced or threatened or punished for the decision you make. That is a human right. And when it comes to vaccination, that human right is being violated all over the place. And we need as a society to stand up and say we are not going to give away that right. It's about bodily autonomy, bodily protection of bodily integrity. It's about human rights. So I do believe that we can turn this around, but it's going to take the will of a lot of people who are thinking clearly and are not making fear-based decisions in order to do that.
And to remember, Barbara, because so often, I mean, we remember as we approach November elections, who was making mandates? Where were these coming from? What was happening in my community, in my state, in our nation in regard to these things? And to have a memory that is going to recall these things as we go to the voting booth.
Absolutely. And I would encourage the younger generation has got to run for office. People who understand how important this issue is, who understand the right for people to have the truth about a pharmaceutical product like a vaccine and be able to make a voluntary decision, they need to run for office. We have to have the best and the brightest be in our state legislatures and our Congress.
Barbara Lou Fisher with us here. Again, the website nvic.org, nvicadvocacy.org. Barbara, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And folks, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.